ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Coming again to the point of pure devotional service, the Lord is describing the transcendental qualifications of a pure devotee in these two verses. A pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstances, nor is he envious of anyone, nor does a devotee become his enemy's enemy. He thinks, this person is acting as my enemy due to my own past misdeeds, so it is better to suffer than to protest. The Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8, it is stated, when a devotee is in distress or has fallen into difficulty, he thinks that this is the Lord's mercy upon him. He thinks, thanks to my past misdeeds, I should suffer far, far greater than I am suffering now. So it is by the mercy of the Supreme Lord that I am not getting all the punishment I am due. I am just getting a little by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is always calm, quiet, patient, despite many distressful conditions. A devotee is always kind to everyone, even to his enemy. Nirmama means that a devotee does not attach much importance to the pains and troubles pertaining to the body, because he knows perfectly well that it is not the material body. He does not identify with the body. Therefore, he is freed from the conception of false ego and is equipoised in happiness and distress. He is tolerant. He is satisfied with whatever comes by the grace of the Supreme Lord. He does not endeavor much to achieve something with great difficulty. Therefore, he is always joyful. He is a completely perfect mystic because he is fixed in the instructions received from the spiritual master. And because his senses are controlled, he is determined. He is not swayed by false arguments because no one can lead him from the fixed determination of devotional service. He is fully conscious that Krishna is the eternal Lord, so no one can disturb him. All these qualifications enable him to fix his mind and intelligence entirely on the Supreme Lord. Such a standard of devotional service is undoubtedly very rare. But a devotee becomes situated in that stage by following the regulative principles of devotional service. Furthermore, the Lord says that such a devotee is very dear to him, for the Lord is always pleased with all his activities in full Krishna consciousness.
In this chapter, Krishna explains 35 qualities of a devotee. So till now, Krishna has been talking about one who attains this Shantara Anantaram. A devotee attains the ultimate peace and happiness. And the qualities of such a devotee is explained in the following verses from here, beginning from here. There are many qualities of devotee explained in the scriptures, and that is why the path of devotional service is called as the science of devotional service, because it is not some figment of someone's imagination, or it is not something that we assume about the devotee, or we sentimentally or blindly accept someone to be a great soul. One who does not know the science of devotional service may be probably accepting any John, Dick and Harry to be Mahatma. Whereas, one who knows the science of devotional service should look for these symptoms in a person to be called as a Mahatma or a pure devotee. So the primary qualification of a devotee is that he is surrendered to Krishna, Krishna Ekashar. And when one attains that one quality, from that springs all the other qualities. One becomes a devotee of Krishna, then all other qualities gradually start manifesting in a devotee. And in these verses, many glorious qualities are explained. And Prabhupada explains here that towards the end, giving us a hope that even if you don't possess all these qualities, or if you find any of these qualities lacking in us, still we have a hope. What is the hope? He explains here. Such a standard of devotional service is undoubtedly very rare. But a devotee becomes situated in that stage by following the regulative principles of devotional service. These are the 64 principles explained by Rupa Goswami. Beginning from Madhavpur Guru Padashray, Sadharma Prachar, all that. So by following those principles, anyone can gradually attain these qualities and can become a very dear devotee of the Lord. So here many wonderful qualities are explained. We'll try to discuss some of them. He is talking about a devotee as one who is non-envious, but a kind friend to all living entities. A devotee is never envious of another. Envy is also called as indirect appreciation for someone else's position, for someone else's great qualification. So if it happens amongst devotees, it should be understood as indirect appreciation. That means if you see some great quality in someone and you appreciate it, instead of directly, openly, heartily appreciating it, you indirectly feel that why that person is possessing such a quality, why not me? So then the envy arises. So it's better that when we feel envy, we directly glorify the devotee. And envy will go away. You will see that. If you feel envious of any devotee, you make a deliberate attempt to openly glorify it. Then it will go away. Of course, we are talking about envy amongst neophyte devotees. But we can also think of envy amongst materialists. And we also have been materialists and we have been brought into the fold of devotees, so we are now behaving like devotees. But the envy is one of the basic principles of material existence. Prabhupada says, envious means almost everyone in the material world. It's very rare to find someone free from envy. In fact, only Uttamadhikari is free from envy. Annyaninda adishunya tadanichita sankalpya. Annyaninda adishunya means he never wants to criticize anyone. So may cause for any reason. To such an extent that even he does not feel any enmity even to someone who considers him to be his enemy. That's the nature of the devotee. He does not harbor any malice for anyone, or he does not wish bad for anyone. He does not pray that let someone suffer. Unknown to a devotee. You can see some many practical examples of this. When Vishnu Maharaj came to know that Dhritarashtra is telling him and the other Pandavas to go for Varnavat for some Shiva's festival. And they were told that there is going to be a big mela there. There will be many exhibitions will be there. There will be singing, there will be dancing, there will be pompous festival put up there. And Dhritarashtra invited them and said, why don't you all go and have fun, have a nice time there. So when they were going for that, Vidura had given a clue. They boarded the chariot and went. Even before Vidura gave a clue, Yudhishthira had a suspicion. He thought, why our uncle is sending only we 5 of us? What about the Kauravas? Why are they not coming? Something is wrong somewhere. He could understand it. But then he didn't want to disobey the order of the elder. So he agreed to go. So Vidura gave him a clue. Now the Pandavas knew that they are going to a place where there is going to be a building of black which they will be put there for some time. And any time it will be set on fire. Can you imagine? Now who will live in a house which is going to be set on fire? It is made of black. Can you imagine? And they were living there. And how can a person sleep in such a house which can be burnt to ashes any time? So they were doing that. Although they were aware that someday something will happen here. There was a messenger from Duryodhana's side who was sent, who was also sleeping in that house. Later on he was planning one day to get up in the dead of the night and put fire to the whole house and burn it down to ashes. That was the plan. So we can see that Yudhishthira many times could see that Duryodhana is in great suffering. And Duryodhana is trying to put an end to him and the other Pandavas. So Yudhishthira could clearly see that. That he saw in front of his eyes his own brother Bhima was poisoned with a poisonous food and poisonous cake. And then somehow Bhima was saved. So Yudhishthira came to know that. Actually, when Bhima was saved, nobody spoke about it. In fact, they suppressed the whole matter. Because if it is brought to surface, Yudhishthira told Kunti as well as the other Pandavas that let us not talk about it. Because we are minority and we are fatherless. And even if we raise this issue, probably it won't be well taken by the other Kauravas as well as the uncles in question. Let us forget it. So in this way, he already perceived the envious attitude of Duryodhana once before. Now for the second time, they are sent to the house of lakhs to be burnt to ashes. So somebody is trying to kill you and still not feel enmity towards that person. How rare it is for one. So in this way, Yudhishthira, you will find is Ajatashatru. He has no enemy at all. Later, after Duryodhana, somehow or other, Pandavas were saved in the fire. It was a great surprise to Duryodhana how, on one hand, he heard the news that there were 5 children who were burnt to ashes in the house, and how these people were saved. And then they got the company of Drupada and married their daughter. But now they become famous. Now Duryodhana was very afraid. He thought that now they will become very powerful because they have joined hands with Drupada. Now they may attack me. Before they attack, I have to give them some piece of land to keep them quiet. So he told his father to give this kind of rest, which is a deserted forest, which is good for nothing. In fact, it is said, none of the people would want to ever go to that place. It's like a condemned place. It's full of forests and there is no facility there. There were no brahmanas, there were no chitras, no vishas, no shudras, they would ever go there. That was one piece of land which no one would go, and that was actually donated by Dhritarashtra to Pandava. He told them that, he called them and he gave them, so that Pandavas will not wage a war against Kauravas. So Duryodhana thought that let him be happy with that. But then you know what happened to Kandavaprastha? By Krishna's special mercy, it was converted into Indraprastha. A big Maya Sabha was made. It became such a beautiful city that all the very learned Brahmanas started migrating from Hastinapur to Indraprastha. So it is explained in Mahabharata how the most learned Brahmanas, the tribal Kshatriyas, well-to-do Vaishyas, and faithful Shudras all migrated to Indraprastha. Everyone. So Duryodhana was again envious. And adding insult to injury, there was a big Rajasri yajna conducted there, which he personally got to witness and could see the glory of Yudhishthira. So for one who is jealous of another, more he sees his glory, the more his heart burns with envy. Deshbhava. More his heart burns with envy. That is why when he returned back again, he made a plot to take away all the wealth of Pandavas. That's why he knew that he can never win them righteously in a war. That's why you see that he makes a plot of gambling match and he tries to defeat the Pandavas in a very tricky way using his uncle Shapuni, who was a great trickster. In this way, in Mahabharata, if you read this article, you will see that every step Duryodhana is envious and he is constantly planning to destroy the Pandavas. And this is that every step is, of course, trying to save himself and save others also, at the same time, not making any plan to harm them. Like, you know, once Duryodhana comes to make many pleasure houses at the bank of the river so that he can make a show to the Pandavas. But then, because of this wrong act, the Kandavas become angry and they capture all the Kauravas and they plan to take them to Jarapur by handcuffing them. At that time, Yudhishthira wants to save the Kauravas. He says that we are 5, they are 100, but now we are 105. Same family. So you can see, to do good to a person who wants to cause harm to you, that is is not a very easy thing. Generally we try to harm others, even if they don't harm us. What is because trying to do good to one who does not want to harm? The Prabhupada writes that here. The devotee is always kind to everyone, even to his enemy. One of the points that I mentioned. Always kind even to his enemy. That is called as Advesta. He has no enemy for anyone. He doesn't derive any joy in causing harm to anyone. So when there is envy, there will also be lack of cooperation. Prabhupada saw, even in his times, Srila Prabhupada, when he saw that there are some neophyte disciples waddling amongst themselves because of envy, then Prabhupada felt very sorry. So, of course, one last statement, during his last days, he made this statement, that if you want to show your love for me, you cooperate amongst yourself. Prabhupada had to say that. But even before that, he used to say that. There was a Mataji, Bhanutanayanandini or something. Bhushbhanutanayanandini. So that Mataji wrote a letter to Prabhupada, saying that Prabhupada, although I was living in the association of devotees in the temple, it's just, it has become so bad that I cannot live. I cannot tolerate these devotees. So she became upset with the devotees and she left the temple. Prabhupada wrote a letter to her, saying that, what have you done? Who will want to leave the association of devotees? Even if there is some small difficulty, small clash of interest, clash of opinions, one should never leave the company of devotees. Otherwise one cannot serve in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada wrote her saying that, you again try to live in the temple. Again, this goes to show that you are not very serious about Krishna consciousness. If you are really serious, you will never leave the company of devotees. So this reminds me of one verse in Bhagavatam, the translation of which goes like this. It says, one who has relished hearing the glories of the Lord in the company of devotees will never leave the association of devotees. Who is a person who will leave the association of devotees if he is not an animal? Never want to leave the company of devotees unless he's an animal. Because he doesn't know the danger of leaving the company of devotees. But the Bhagavatam was saying, Brahma is not his name. So, one who is envious of devotees cannot live in the company of devotees. It's not possible. And in the Bhagavatam, it is explained how, among the relationship between devotees, there is senior relationships, there are equal, there is junior. And specific symptoms are given. How should one feel? So we can know the standard. And if we are away from the standard, then we can try to put ourselves in the standard. Like it is said, when one looks upon a senior, one should feel jolly. Prabhupada says, one should feel jolly to receive a senior. Happily to respect that person and take his association. And when one sees an equal, then one should befriend an equal. One should share with an equal. Friend in Krishna consciousness. And when one sees a junior, one should feel compassion. One should want to help a junior. So he says these are actually natural qualities of a Vaishnava, how one is supposed to behave. But the ideal is this, but the not ideal situation is that when one sees a superior, one feels envious. Why a superior is respected? Why a superior is glorified? Why a superior is honored? Why a superior is treated like God? One is unable to tolerate. That's why in Bhagavatam there is a verse that says, Acharya mam vijaniyam na avamanyeta karhichit namartya buddhya suyeta sarvadeva mayo. It says, Acharya mam vijaniyam. Understand that the Acharya is myself, the spiritual master should be seen as good as Krishna. Na abhamanyeta karhichit. Never offend him. Namartya buddhya asuyeta. Don't see him with material eyes. If you see him with material eyes, Nabhatibhita Suyeta. Suyeta means envy. If you see with envious eyes, then you will be destroyed. He is Sarvadeva Mayaguru. He is a sum total representation of all the demigods present in one person. Because actually all the demigods are worshippers, are worshippers of Vishnu or Krishna. And the demigod actually, and the spiritual master actually connects us to Krishna. So one should never feel envy for him. Sometimes the neophytes say, people feel sometimes, why this Swamiji is coming in such a posh car? He is coming in a Kalis, or is coming in a Mercedes Benz. He said, Swami, why does he need that? Or why people are washing his feet? Why people are bowing down to him, everyone bowing down to him? Then people feel like that. Like once when Prabhupada arrived at the airport, devotees are chanting and dancing, doing kirtans. As soon as Prabhupada came, 100 people fell flat on the ground. And was then chanting Prabhupada's pranati. And the reporters were standing, they were seeing, they were the only ones standing. Everyone else was down. They were shocked to see that. And then Prabhupada was smiling and then everyone got up. And the reporters came, Prabhupada asked, so Swamiji, this is the way people receive you? Everywhere? And Prabhupada immediately smelled that these people are envious. Because Prabhupada is being respected like that. And Prabhupada told them, I don't see how they receive me. I am only interested to know how they receive my mission for which I have come here. Whether they are taking Krishna consciousness, that is more important for me than how these people respect me. So Prabhupada indirectly told them that actually don't think they are saluting me, they are actually saluting my mission. Another time, not another time, many times, when Prabhupada is visiting the Vyasas and staff reporters will come, and they feel very uneasy that Swami is sitting on an elevated seat and we have to sit down. So one of the reporters openly told Prabhupada, what is this, you are sitting on a high seat and we have to sit down. So after that, when the reporter came again for another time, then Prabhupada told the reporter to sit in the same seat, in one bed kind of thing. And then that person asked, Swami, you are not sitting on an elevated seat now? And Prabhupada said, you will feel envious, what can I do? He openly said that. So, we can easily see that in this world, envy is very common. The envy of superiors. Although we may not openly say that, at least heart of hearts we feel envious. If some superior is loved by everyone and everyone talks to them, everyone glorifies them, everywhere there is glorification going on, when we hear that, heart starts fuming. We start fuming and sweating. What is that? Nobody talks about me. Everyone talks about the superior. This is a practical example of envy. So when we feel envy, what should we do? One should openly, heartily glorify that devotee and serve the devotee. So we have to kick this envy away. Devotees are all magnanimous souls. They are great souls. We should not foolishly envy them and bring degradation to our own spiritual lives foolishly. And similarly, with one who is equal, we are supposed to befriend them. Somehow, even in a society like ours, such a wonderful society, such a scientific society, Prabhupada has given such a scientific background of philosophy, and such a systematic understanding has given. Despite understanding all this, still, when it comes to the question of equals, or equal Vaishnavas, sometimes there can be some kind of imaginative. So people may imagine things about others and may feel envious of equals also. Like for example, in this world, we attach ourselves to so many material identities, owing to which we compare and contrast. For example, I am this department, you are in that department. That's how things can begin. We are cook distribution department, you are cooking department. We are better than you. Or we are this temple, you are that temple. We can compare the temples. We are Indian temples, you are Western temples. Isn't it? So we can put limited circle around ourselves and identify with some, like a frog in the well. We can identify like that. Because of which, there can be envy among devotees, criticism among devotees. It's possible. Actually, everyone wants to be unique and everyone wants to be great. That's the problem. That is why one One of our disciples was speaking in a lecture. He said, don't try to become a great devotee. Try to become a good devotee. Try to become a good devotee, not great devotees. Because if everyone tries to become great, I am great and you are great, that's comparison. And when we compare, there can be... Actually, by comparison, and trying to show one's greatness, then every... It's like united we stand, united we fall, it is like that. Like the example, Prabhupada used to say, the bundle of sticks story. When you remove the bundle and separate them, they all become weak. Usually they can break them very easily. But if everyone puts aside their false ego and comes together and becomes united, then the power will become multiplied. In fact, one of the scientific theories also says that when you have two mighty bars, you know, when they are separate, if you test their strength, it will come to a particular value. But when you combine them and then you test them for, I don't know, God test is it. Is it sheer strength or whatever strength? Then the combined strength, if you see, it is not a sum total of the two, but much, much more. When you combine them, it's not 1 plus 1. It's actually much, much more than that when you combine them together. In the same way, with equals, we should learn to not brag about ourselves and about ourselves and our activities. Generally, one of the reasons for bragging about ourselves is to prove to the other person that don't think you are doing many things, I am also doing. Don't think you are great in those services, I am also doing those services. The tendency to brag comes from insecurity. But if we have the sense of worth within, if we are blessed by the spiritual master, Krishna, the Vaishnavas, we don't have to brag about ourselves. We can relate with the equal, with a desire to learn something valuable. So, this kind of envy is something that will dry up the heart. Like Ramachandra Puri, isn't it? The way he behaved with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Actually, even with Vaishnavas, he used to behave like that. He'd feed the Vaishnavas a lot and then criticize them for eating too much. Similarly, he would criticize that even Lord Chaitanya. So, when Lord Chaitanya saw that Ramachandra Puri is criticizing him for eating too much, reduce his food very much. And all the Vaishnavas felt very sorry. And they also started starving many days. And Lord Chaitanya told the other Vaishnavas, what's wrong? He is my well-wisher. He's like my father. He's telling me that I am a sannyasi, I should not eat too much. And that is correct. He's telling for my good. But he took it in this way. So this goes to show that the devotee, even if a devotee comes to know that somebody is envious of you, still you should not feel bad about that person. That's why Prabhupada explains in Satyayana Kampam Samikshamana. The devotee is never envious of anyone, nor does the devotee become his enemy's enemy. He may say, actually, you know, if somebody is good with me, then I will also be good with them. So people say like that. See, if you give respect and take respect, give honor and take honor, you be good to me and I will be good to you. That is good, that's one platform. But even if somebody is not good to you, to be good to that person, that is the platform of a devotee. That's why he is saying here that a devotee does not become, nor does a devotee become his enemy's enemy. This is very difficult. To not feel enmity for someone who dislikes you. You try to think about it in your mind. If you know that somebody doesn't like you, what do you feel? What feelings come in your mind towards that person? Good feelings come on. Avoid that person. We like people who glorify us. We would like to surround ourselves with people who glorify us. And people who don't like us, or people who pinpoint our faults, we want to keep distance from them. Because I had 2-3 people who are very straightforward and who will tell the faults right on the face. There are some people whom I came across in my life. It would be very purifying to have their friendship. It would be very nice. If you are really serious about cleansing our hearts, to have friendship with such people is sometimes good. Because they are very frank and open and they tell your faults on the face. But these are your faults, I observed it. But generally, sometimes we fear to go near them. You know why? you see them only, you know that this person will tell me, my father, I would like to keep distance from them. What is think of liking them? Like you said here, that a devotee never becomes his enemy's enemy. And how does a devotee take it? This person is acting as my enemy due to my own past mistakes. So it is better to suffer than to protest. Such a situation actually happened in Prabhupada's life once. When Prabhupada was speaking on the dais, one man demanded that he wants to go to dais and meet Prabhupada and ask a question. Many devotees tried to stop him. But then Prabhupada said, allow him, let him come, what he wants to ask. So he proceeded to the top, and when he went first, Prabhupada started practically blasphemy, shouting and yelling about Prabhupada. The devotees became very angry. They caught him by his hands and dragged him out to the assembly. And Prabhupada was telling the devotees, I don't know what the misdeeds I did in my past life, due to which this living entity is angry with me. Something wrong, I must have done something wrong because he is feeling like this. What can be said? He said, and then he continued with his other work. And just before going, Prabhupada asked about that person, is he still there? Prabhupada met that person and went before going. Like that. Prabhupada was always kind like that. So a devotee tolerates. So feel that anything that I suffer comes from my own past activities. Nobody else is good thing. That's like if our teeth bites our tongue, who is to be blamed? If somebody causes you some harm, you will become angry with them. If your teeth bites your tongue, what should you do? You can't do anything. Tolerate it, isn't it? Similarly, when somebody else causes us any pain, we have to know that this person actually would not have caused me pain unless it is there in my account. Already in my account some quantum of suffering are fixed for me. And he is just delivering the check, that's all. Like somebody coming and delivering you the goods. He is just delivering the goods. And he is just the instrument. So why blame the instrument? Like the devotee. He's saying, Prabhupada once was hit by a bull. Of course, while Prabhupada was walking in the road, fell on the ground and he stood up. So we can see that sometimes some mishaps happen in our lives, some sufferings come in our lives. So if you always learn to see them as goods delivered by different agents, which is ultimately known to Krishna, which is actually sent by Krishna, then a devotee can go on peacefully with devotion service, without unnecessarily getting disturbed in the mind. That's why he says a pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstances. Generally disturbance is caused in the mind, and that is what is exhibited by the body later. First you feel disturbance in the mind, and then the lips will be quivering, eyes become red, heart starts palpitating very fast, whole body may shiver, in this way we become upset, we become angry, in this way with the situation that we have to face. But when one can have this kind of spiritual outlook, then a devotee can go on with devotional service without getting disturbed. That's why he says, Adveshta Sarva Bhutana Maitra Karuna Evacha. Actually, this also is supported by the devotee's vision, which is explained in Ishopanishad, as well as in Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, all the scriptures. And a devotee sees every living being as a part and parcel of Krishna. He doesn't see anybody separate from Krishna. If you see in our neophyte stage, sometimes when we develop enmity for someone, we may gradually develop that enmity into vengeance. You know what is vengeance? Vengeance is a revengeful attitude. Revengeful is called a vindictive attitude. Vindictive or revengeful attitude towards someone. Like you can see in some people, you tell someone's name, immediately they'll get disturbed. The whole body will vibrate, they'll shake. You can see that the heart will breathe as soon as they hear the name of that person. You have seen sometimes? Okay. So because that vengeance is there, Even in material circles also, families, if they hear the name of some family or some person, it's a surname. Isn't it? So it can happen at any time. That means the revengeful attitude, as long as it is there, we cannot go back to God yet. That part. We have to cure that seed of revenge. It has to be burned to ashes. Like Dhruva Maharaj, he was feeling something like that towards his stepmother. When he saw that she did not allow me to sit on the lap of my father. In fact, he protested. His father didn't say anything. He kept mum. Then he asked his mother, what is this? Why my stepmother is not allowing me to sit on the lap of my father? And the mother said, my dear child, what can I say? Your father loves her more than me. He loves Suruchi more than me. And Suruchi said that if you want to sit on the lap of your father, you should be born through my womb. From my womb, only then you can sit. Nobody else is allowed to sit on the lap of Tanapai. So Dhruva Maharaj felt so bad. Actually, he's a Kshatriya. Naturally, he had that attitude. So he wanted to prove to his stepmother, and prove to his father, and prove to the world that he is no less than his father or grandfather or anybody in the whole world. So he wanted to prove to the world that I will get a kingdom greater than my father. You are saying that my father is great because of his kingdom. And I am very tiny. I'll just prove this. So this was his mentality, originally. But then when he went, that is why even when Narada Muni gave him advice that you are a child, why do you go and perform penance and all? Just go home and play, everything will be all right. Just forget all the problems. But Dhruva Maharaj was so firm in determination. He said, Narada Muni, although you are giving good advice, I am a Kshatriya by nature. All your good advice to make a peace agreement doesn't appease me. He said, you tell me how to see Vishnu. Otherwise, please kindly get out of my way. I will go to the forest and I will find out God Vishnu. So when Dhruva Maharaj performed the severe penance in the forest, first he was eating one type of fruit which was not at all tasty. It was like saw powder, absolutely no taste. It's a big fruit but no taste. The kandamul also has no taste. Any of you eaten kandamul, you try? There is absolutely no taste. Only stuff is there but no taste. So he was eating like that. Then he was surviving only on water. Then he was surviving only on dry leaves. Having only on air. Then he even stopped breathing air out. So although a small child, he performed severe penance. And then it's not a dry renunciation because he made the deity of Vishnu as per the direction given by Narada Muni in the Madhuban, which is also a very special place. And he performed a severe devotional penance, seeking the audience of Lord Vishnu. And then Lord Vishnu appears in front of him. When he became overwhelmed with devotion for Vishnu, in that state, all his envy became completely dissolved. That is a verse in Bhagavatam that explains how Dhruva Maharaj, how his condition was before when he thought of his stepmother. And after performing this devotion to the Lord and taking darshan of the Lord, when Dhruva goes back home, meet his mother. He goes to his stepmother also in opposite way. He totally lost the propensity to be envious. He didn't feel that envy at all. He felt about his stepmother exactly like he felt about his own mother. There is no difference. So this gives us hope that when we become perfected devotees, we will lose his revengeful attitude. Even towards those whom we love. Attachment for Uttam as a brother. So because of which he became very angry with the Yakshas. The Yakshas only killed Uttam. He became very, very angry. Of course, Bhagavatam teaches us many, many things, valuable lessons. So when Dhruva was killing all the Yakshas, who comes there? Grandfather. Kubera comes first. Sugata tells him, see, one yaksha killed your brother. Father, you should not kill the entire race of yakshas. That's not befitting you. And besides that, you are a pure devotee of the Lord, you should not become overdriven by anger. He tells him. And also there are sages, the devotees in the sky, who give a good advice to Jiva, to chant the holy names. You know, when he is not. In fact, the yakshas, what are they doing? They send all this, you know, foul smelling stool and urine and pus and bile and everything they throw from the sky. And all those illusions are created by the yakshas, which comes on the top of Dhruva. And it completely covers over Dhruva as if the sun is hidden in the clouds. Covered over like that. So momentarily, Dhruva is overtaken by that illusion. But then the great devotees of the Lord come in and pray and tell him, Dhruva, although you are stunned now, you chant the holy name of the Lord and then you will get help. Superior help. And he chants the holy name. And he comes out of the illusion. And his anger immediately passes away. So, we can understand that whenever we become angry, we can also chant the holy name. See, in Bhagavatam you will find, step by step Bhagavatam talks of great devotees, maybe with sometimes with slight impurities. For example, say, Bharat Maharaj becomes a deer, and then in the next life becomes Jadabharata. Jadabharata means he doesn't speak anything. Completely keeps quiet. Jada means like, you know, like a dead matter. Why was he like that? He was a great Paramahamsa within the heart. But externally he put up the show of a dumb fool, was ignorant fool. Why did he put up a show? Because he didn't want to mix with materialistic people. He thought that people call me a fool, but internally I will be relishing my devotion to the Lord. He was living like that. And he didn't speak a word. But when he comes across Raghuna, Raghuna wanted him to lift the palanquin. Lift the palanquin. He was going, there was an ant in the way, you know. He puts his feet across the ants without harming them. And Raghuna is insulting him, calling him, you seem to be very skinny. That's why you are not able to lift the palanquin properly. Although Raghuna knew that this fellow is very fat. So, in this world, the most difficult thing for us to tolerate is insults on the face. Very difficult to tolerate. Somebody insults you right on the face and tells you, I know that you have this fault. Has anybody faced like that? Somebody telling you your insults. To tell that person, please tell me more. Very difficult. They will not let that person speak one word more. Before that, he will shut his mouth. He will close his mouth. Enough is enough. So, here is Jadabharata hearing those insults. And he was given insults. And then he keeps mum for some time and then he starts speaking. He says that, my dear king, you are calling me that I am skinny. Whether I am skinny or fat, what difference it makes? So, soul is neither fat nor skinny. And you call me that I am your servant and you are my master. Probably we may reverse our positions in the next life. I may be your master and you will be my servant. And ignorant of this knowledge, you are thinking you are the master. So when you are speaking all these things, Raghuna heard it and he jumped off from the palanquin and he fell to the ground flat, clasping the feet of Jadabharata. And he quoted the famous words, Aham Vishanke Suraraja Bhajan Natakshashulan Yamasyadanda. He says, my dear Lord, I am not even afraid of Naham Vishanki Suraraja Vrajran. I am not afraid of the Indra's thunderbolt. Nor am I afraid of the Trishul of Shiva. Nor am I afraid of Yama's Yamapash. But I am afraid of Brahma Kulabhamana. I don't want to offend a Vaishnava. Now I understood that you are not ordinary soul, you are a great soul. So there you find Jadabharata exhibiting a slight upsetness, slightly is upset. Of course, after he surrenders him, he gives him education, he enlightens him, and the forest of middle enjoyment, and all he speaks. After hearing all that, Raghuna becomes enlightened. But Jadabharata does not stay 1 minute more than he immediately walks off. Although he is a guru, he doesn't stay with the disciple. Now you take me to your kingdom and make me official priest, I'll be with you. No. After giving the knowledge, he immediately walks out. So he had the detachment. He had the firm detachment, but you see a slight anger in him. But trace of that. So in Bhagavatam you will find many characters, great personalities with different sides and duties, and then as you go ahead and ahead and ahead you come to learn how to both these things. So that is why pure devotion means we have to be 100% pure. That is a very very high platform. But by like in Dhruva's pastime, there is some amount of Rajaguna there. That's why Kapila explains three types of bhakti. Tamaguni bhakti, Rajaguni bhakti, Sattaguni bhakti. Shuddha bhakti transcends all the three. Even the answer to Sattaguna bhakti also. So in this way, devotee is non-envious, but a kind friend to all living entities. Who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego. Adveshta atara bhutana maitra karuna evaja nirmamo nirahankara. So maitra means he is a friend to all living entities, friend of everyone. In the Bhagavad Gita service, when we talk of friend, the friend in need is a friend indeed. So we need friends, especially at the hour of crisis. Like in Bhagavad Gita itself, there is a verse about friendship. It says, Machitta Madgata Prana Bodhayanta Parasparam. My devotees develop friendship among themselves by coming together and talking my glories in their midst. Parasparam means mutual. Kadayantascha Maam Nityam Tushyanti Charamanti Cha. They derive great joy in discussing pastimes about me and everything. So, this kind of devotional friendship is most essential. We are living in Kali Yuga now. None of us is capable of living alone in Himalayas in seclusion, perpetual seclusion. It's a practical impossibility for most of the population. So a society of devotees is very essential for one's survival in Krishna consciousness and growth in Krishna consciousness. So that type of friendship of devotees is a very fundamental principle for one's development. That's why Prabhu Goswami talks about this. Six types of exchanges among devotees. Giving prasadam, accepting prasad, and giving a gift and accepting a gift, and speaking in confidence, revealing one's mind confidentially, and hearing confidentially from a devotee. So these six things should be done with an attitude of love. Otherwise this is not friendship. Priti, it is explained. Priti is not the basis for these six things, then it is not considered true friendship. It's not proper association. So Shadvidam, Priti Lakshanam. Priti is very important. Because these things can be officially done. You can give a gift to someone officially, even your company gives you a gift. Season's greetings, isn't it? Season's greetings, it's just a official thing which everyone gets. It doesn't touch your heart so much. You know, your company gives you every year during New Year and Diwali. Give without loving, he's saying, but you cannot love without giving. That means love implies service. That's what he means. Love means devotion service. Yeah. And not just devotion. If you love someone, naturally you will have to give something, sacrifice something for another. That's why the six things are mentioned. The six things which you said that shall be the pre-collection. So every one of this, that's the difference between, you know, your mother serving your food and waiter serving you food in the hotel. That is an indication of the difference in love. Mother showers love when she serves you. Whereas the waiter serves you out of desire for doing business. In the same way with devotees also, Maitra Karunaya, which is Maitra. This Mitrata principle among devotees is a very powerful way in elevating a devotee's consciousness. Because most of the things we learn in the path of Krishna consciousness is by seeing other devotees. By observing other devotees. Because when we see a devotee behaving respectfully, then you also pick up that vibration, then you also deal with others respectfully. Similarly, when you see a devotee smiling, always smiling, always happy. Then you also learn, pick up that. Then you also smile. You don't know how, but you pick up these things, just like the children pick up from the parents. Similarly, the devotees also pick up this kind of things from others. You will always see that one who is trained by someone, they have a great influence of the trainer. One who trains them, you will see that. The effect of the trainer is very much there. You will see whether it is Prabhuji's or Mataji's, you will see that. Someone trained. And I have observed this very carefully. People coming from different parts of India, and they come, people carry the, what do you call it, some impression of the leader from where they come. You will always observe that. If you make a careful observation, you will see that the, whether it is boys or whether it is congregation devotees or Mataji's. So that means that the person who is preaching has a very great influence on the people to whom he is preaching. So in a society of devotees like this, the friendship is like a lubricant, or it's like a rope that binds everyone together. It means we all influence one another. So if we can positively influence one another in Krishna consciousness, by inspiring one another. Like he says, parasparam katayanta samanikam pachitta amatya prana bodhiyantam parasparam. There is a verse in Bhagavatam which was spoken by the Lord to the Prachetas. It begins like this, varam rinisvam badram go. That's a verse. The Lord says, O Prachetas, I am most pleased by your mutual cooperation performing the Surya Ganesh for me. That is the one which touches my heart the most. Because all of you have jointly performed this dance for me, but you all have been cooperating amongst yourselves. The Lord becomes very pleased for that. But I'm getting some of somebody else. So this verse is very, very famous in this one. Many great sannyasis and spiritual masters have spoken on this verse. Pratak Bhav means, So in this way, Maitra Karuna Eva Chaitra. That means this nature of one of the natures of a devotee is that he is always a kind friend to all living entities. Actually, we are also trying to be a friend to everyone, but sometimes in the course of mixing with people, we get different mentalities. We start discriminating someone as a friend, someone as an enemy. We can see that. But this person is always a friend to all living entities. Prabhupada used to write, you are ever well-wishers. Used to write it. So to be a well-wishing friend of everyone is not very easy. So when we have the first quality, then the second quality will follow it. See, he does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego. That is Amani. This is one of the 26 qualities, Amani. That means he is free from sense of false ego. There is another quality called Akrita Droha. That means humility. So these two are very related. Amani and Akrita Droha, they are very, very related. Which means the devotee, in the same verse, I think he says, Anahankara, he says, no? He says that? Nirahankara, he says, without false ego. So are very similar qualities. Atvishta Asura Bhutana, Maitra, Karuna, Evacham. I didn't say about Karuna, isn't it? Karuna means one who cannot tolerate seeing others suffering. This fellow is a Karuna. One's heart cannot remain calm by seeing others suffering. These are things we can test ourselves to check. When others are suffering, how do you feel? Like, you know, if somebody throws a stone on the car, the glass is broken, bang, it breaks. How do you feel? If it is your car, you feel that you are broken down. But it's not your car, how do you feel? Thank God. That didn't happen to me. That didn't happen to me at least. Any accident you hear, like, you know, this train had an accident, anything, thank God I came yesterday. And today accident happened. So when it happens to others, we think I am saved. We don't feel that pain when it happens to others. So somehow it is not in our system because of our neophyteness and contamination. So you don't feel that pain when others make. Like, you know, para dukkha dukhi, we say, para dukkha dukhi means to see the suffering of others and feel sorry for that. Para dukkha dukhi. One very important thing in all these discussions is that the center should be Krishna. Otherwise, none of these qualities can be glorified. There are so many people feeling pain when they see others suffering, and they are trying to make some material arrangements to give them happiness. It's actually violence. To help a person without giving him Krishna is called violence. Because you can't help anyone without including Krishna element in it. So, it's not that a devotee feels a material compassion towards other living beings. But actually when his heart is flooded with karuna, compassionate attitude to see the living being suffering from want of Krishna. It is said, when a pure devotee, in the 11th canto there is a verse about the Uttama Bhagavata. It says that when a devotee sees any living entity suffering, he immediately understands that this living entity is suffering owing to his separation from Krishna. That's what a devotee feels. So he feels just as I am suffering away from Krishna without his association. Similarly, every living entity is suffering due to want of Krishna. So what do you think? Is it correct or wrong? Is it correct or wrong? This question. No, he feels when he sees divinity suffering, he thinks that all the divinities are suffering because of want of Krishna. Because they are separated from Krishna, that's why they are crying and weeping. Somebody may be crying because they are hungry. Or somebody is weeping because they lost their examination. Or they didn't get a job or whatever. But when a devotee sees everyone suffering, what he feels? He is suffering because he is missing Krishna. Actually, it is truth. Yeah. When we are missing Krishna, none of the things of the world can satisfy him. The devotee sees him. Let's say he is a Kripalu. Kripalu means he is extremely merciful. Like he is ready to tolerate any amount of suffering on his own account in order to make the other living entities happy, like Dhanti Dev, for example. When Chandala came, Brahmana came, dogs came, they were thirsty for water. 48 days he had fasted, after which he was about to take his prasad. But all these people came, and in all the hearts of those living entities, he saw the Lord in the hearts. And he saw that all these jivas are part and parcel of Krishna. How can they suffer like this? So he gave away the food, gave away the water, everything that was there he gave away. And there was nothing for him to eat. And his whole body was shivering. When he was about to leave his body, then all these chandalas and brahmanas and dogs, and they all got transformed into devatas. And they all blessed him. They all actually came to test him. Like that. So this is the platform of a devotee. And his heart is filled with compassion for other living beings. So next time when we meet, we can discuss on this Nirmamo Nirahankara. And Nirmamo Nirahankara discussion also will include the quality of humility. They are very, very closely related terms. So by hearing these qualities of a great devotee, we can become very inspired in our own devotion service. Many things we can do. One thing is we can assess ourselves, where am I and where am I right now and where am I to go? How long way I have to go? And we also learn the methods to improve, how we can make our life better. Because we have to acquire these qualities. If you have to actually become a devotee, we have to possess these qualities. Then only one can be called a devotee. Devotee is not one who wears a tilak and wears kandimala and has a bead bag in the neck, then one becomes a devotee. This is probably the easiest thing to do, anybody can do. You can even employ someone, you can ask them to shave up their mush and put a bead bag around their neck, isn't it? Put beads and put tilak and say that if anybody asks you, who are you, say you are Krishna Das. Yes. And you can pay them a monthly salary. And their heart is not engaged in Krishna service. Now, externally, one can put up a show like a devotee. You think it's like fancy dress competition. Actually, these qualities are acquired over a period of time. That's why Prabhupada gives us the hope, as I was saying. All these qualifications enable. That is it, Prabhupada. Such a standard of service is undoubtedly very rare, but a devotee becomes situated in that state by following the regulations of the Prabhupada. Something will come to this platform, these qualities. So we have to know that these are ideal qualities. We don't have to break our head that, there is something called paralysis by analysis. paralysis by analysis means sometimes you become too much a perfectionist. You become too critical about every one of your movements. I am a devotee, how am I walking? How am I sitting? How am I speaking? You become too much tensed about it. If you become too much a perfectionist, that is also a problem. Actually, we have to introspect. We have to find out our faults. We should try to improve. But one shouldn't go to a critical zone of cursing oneself and becoming too critical about oneself. It's like, you know, either I'll be pure devotee or I'll commit suicide. Nothing in between. One doesn't have to go to that zone. Because we should know that we cannot become pure devotee in a moment. Actually, we all will see in the execution of our devotion service, we will see that many times we plan to behave in a certain way and we fail. And how do you feel that time? You feel, again I have failed. And once again I have failed. Then you learn that, okay, I have to improve. So one should not lose that hope. Hope against hope. As far as Ashabandha. Ashabandha means to have a hope that someday I will become a pure devotee. Krishna will bless me, Vaishnava will bless me, and I am wonderful devotee. We should go on with that. But learning these qualities should actually enhance our devotion service, not choke our devotion service. Think that, no, my Lord, I am envious, I am a rascal, I am a fool, I am finished now. Actually, even Acharya says that, you know, like a song. What is that? Amara jivan sada papera nahi ko punye ralesha. When you sing that song, we have to know that many bad qualities are there in me. But I am very hopeful that I have got the right shelter. And I have got the company of wonderful devotees. And I have got my spiritual master who will uplift me. The Acharyas will uplift me. The holy name is extremely powerful. Vaishnavas are very powerful. Prasadam is very potent. And I will drink charanamrita and destroy all my material desires. I will chant the holy names and become completely enlightened my heart. So in this way, a devotee should feel great confidence in advancing in Krishna consciousness. One should not become hopeless. So that is the purpose of learning these qualities, hearing about the glories of Vaishnavas. Like one devotee was telling me that was telling about my lecture. Whenever you speak lecture, it appears that you are sending arrows right at my chest. One after another. You speak in a pricking way, one devotee was telling. I said, I'll try to change my style. But it will take some years, you all have to be patient. So whenever I speak, generally, I talk from a critical viewpoint. I never knew that. Recently one devotee revealed to me. And he said, you know, your lecture seems to be not giving any hope. So that is why I try to conclude my lecture in a positive way today. Actually, nobody tells our faults. People generally keep glorifying us, but one devotee is in the revealed to me. So after learning that, so you were telling that, you know, when you speak a lecture, you should also say some sweet things also. You always say only, you know, it's like, you know, constant performance of surgical operation. Anyway, actually by speaking like this, I always feel that it helps me. But also, maybe we should try to talk of the other positive aspects also. See, generally what we do, when we talk of the positive aspect, we glorify the pure devotee. And then when we come down to our level, we only surgical operation. It's not that all devotees are bad. It's not that we are all the time envious, all the time greedy, all the time lusty. A devotee has both the sides. Envy is something that comes occasionally. Similarly, all the bad qualities may appear in the life of the devotee occasionally. So we have a good side, we have a bad side. But the purpose of talking all this is to gradually get rid of the bad side of us. So I hope all devotees take it in the positive spirit. There will be many more qualities we will be discussing like this till the end of this chapter. But these qualities should actually inspire us and not choke us. Even when you hear the Vaishnava Acharyas, when they sing such songs like, you know, Amar Jivan and all, it's not that they are feeling some kind of inferiority complex. No. Acharyas are very courageous. acharyas. You see this Krishna Kaviraj Goswami, he says, if anyone takes my name, anyone remembers my name, they will lose all their bad credits. He says like that. I am more fallen than Jagai and Magai. He says like that. In one place. So he is so humble. And then in another place he says, over a mood alok, he says, oh foolish people of this world, who do not take shelter of Lord Chaitanya. And he also says, if you call somebody as a mood alok, then they become angry. And then when you come to attack the person who called you a fool, and he says, I will humiliate and catch hold of the hands of blood, Nityananda. And then when you go to ask Nityananda, am I a fool or am I intelligent, then he will deliver you. So they are very confident. Not that. That is why often this kind of humility is mistaken to be inferiority complex. Actually, humility is courage. Humility is not inferiority complex. So inferiority complex leads to depression. But you don't find the acharyas are always enthusiastic. In fact, their observation of their bad qualities in them enthuses them to surrender to Krishna more. Become more ecstatic in surrendering to Krishna. That is the purpose of this kind of self-awareness or this kind of knowing our own faults. So they have complete faith that Lord can deliver. Like Prabhupada says, you know, I don't have bhakti, I don't have, you know, Vedic knowledge, bhakti nahi, vedana nahi, says, but then I have complete faith in the holy name. And I cannot do anything, but the holy name is so powerful that it will deliver all these hippies. Say it like that. So that means that kind of, we don't have faith in our strength, but we have faith in Lord's strength. And we take shelter of Lord, and Lord will do everything. See, by seeing that the Lord is in the heart of every living being, the Lord is accompanying everyone in everyone's heart. See, it is said when you do Dandavat also, a devotee sees the Paramatma in the heart of the devotee, then he does Dandavat like that. Paramatma is there in the heart of everyone, but the soul who is sitting is covered over by many, many impurities. For example, if you see the soul covered by many impurities, you may not want to respect. Will you respect someone who is covered with many impurities? Like Prabhupada says in Ishopanishad about this, what you are asking. He says, yeah, Uttama Bhagavad can see that the soul in the dog's body has misused its free will, point to which currently sitting in the dog's body. Whereas the soul in the Brahmana's body has rightly used its free will, point to which is now currently put in the Brahmana's body. But both the souls are in quality one. In quality the same. That is Dhyamaya Sampanna. One is able to see like that. But still, when one, for a beginner, it is always said, you should see the Lord in the heart. So, Shri Prabhupada, because when you see the Lord in the heart, Lord is always pure. He is never contaminated at any occasion. Whether we are sitting in a worm's body, or you are sitting in a devata's body, the Lord always remains aloof, like that other bird in the tree. Paramatma highlighted, but also there is a spark near that you will see. It is both. You will see the picture. Yeah. Yeah, Prabhuji is asking, even in a disturbed state, Guru Maharaj could meditate. Is it the blessings of Narada? That's very correct. It was blessing of spiritual master that when he was in a disturbed state, he had become little overdriven by anger. So when the sages and devotees told him, please cool down, just chant the holy name of the Lord, all auspiciousness will come upon you. Immediately accepted it. Yeah. It's much of spiritual master. Sometimes you are put in a precarious situation. And it's only by the blessings of three things are said, Hari, Guru, Vaishnava. Vipra, Dharma, Chudashraya. In Bhagavatam. If one is always serving the Vipra, Dharma, Achyuta. If you are performing Dharma, you are worshipping the Lord, and serving the Vaishnavas, right time will be blessed by the right act what one should be doing. Asking, we have theory which we are discussing today, but when a devotee is practically put in the situation, sometimes devotees turn away from the association of devotees, thinking that, you know, why I was put in such a trouble? Yeah, why don't they? That time they are unable to apply the philosophy they learned, the theory that they have learned. See, in the aspect of Maitra, Prabhupada gives an example. He says devotees are like pilots. See, amongst pilots there is a friendship many times. Like pilots sometimes sit together and discuss what are the problems that come when you fly in the sky, and you know what are the controls and commands that one should follow and everything. So there's a lot of discussion amongst them, and sometimes they talk about the troubleshooting also. If you face this trouble, what do you do? If that trouble, what do you do? So they spend some time in all that. But then once you board the plane, then every one of us is an individual fighter aircraft, isn't it? And you are flying in the sky. Then actually the training is given, the apprenticeship training is given when you are on land, but once you fly in the sky, then you are alone, you are practiced. Everyone is an individual, that time, like that. So this kind of theory when we hear, we learn it and absorb it. And when one is put in a situation, that is a real test for us. Like, you know, we are hearing this lecture today, we are hearing about his qualities. It's not that we all are going to be successful when we are put to test. Sometimes after talking so much, we may become engaged with it. Hearing about not being envious, after speaking about not being envious, still may become envious. But at that time we can understand, sometimes we can pray to the Lord, my dear Lord, this quality I have heard so many times, we should not become envious. Why do I become envious? So this anatta is so strong in my heart, it seems formidable. It seems a formidable task to remove it. Please help me. So when devotee seeks the help of the Lord, then Lord will help. Or a devotee can seek the help of another devotee. One can go to a senior devotee and say, like some junior devotees come to me and they tell me, Ramji, you know, I don't even feel envious of you at all, you know. I think you are on a different level. But when I see that devotee, you know, who is equal to me, I just cannot stand to even look at him. I feel envious. So they come and say sometimes. Then we tell the devotees, you know, how to cure that envy by, you know, making friendship with them and serving them and loving them. So one should go and reveal the heart to another devotee. See, revealing the heart solves half the problem. It dissolves half of your problem. So you need a mature devotee to whom one can go and reveal. If one keeps, for example, if you are unhappy with another devotee, for example, if you don't go and tell the devotee that I am unhappy with you, these are the problems I am facing with you, if you don't tell, it builds up. Builds. One day it will blow up. And when you will blow up, you know, there won't be any serious matter. It may be insignificant thing for which you will blow. You see that? And that you will do, the devotee may wonder why this person is blowing up like this. You know, because it builds up over a long period of time. So when we face anathas, we need other devotees to whom we can. That is why Ukhyamakhyati Prichati. Ukhyamakhyati Prichati means, yeah, neophyte devotee goes to your anubhavi devotee, you know, experienced devotee. Reveals his or her mind. That devotee hears and then tells that, you know, this is not a new thing, such things happen. Don't worry, it can happen. So when we hear from a superior, then our heart becomes. Like one boy, I heard of a fall down of some devotee. He had become shocked. He read in the paper or something, you know, that somebody fell down, wrong habit or something like that. So he said, how can such a thing happen? Krishna says he protects his devotee. Ame bhakta pranashyati. Krishna said that. How can this devotee fall down? Where is Krishna? Is he not watching this? I told him, yeah, it is true. Then I was telling him how a person falls down. There are various ways. Krishna is always protecting, but if somebody doesn't want to be protected, what can Krishna do? He has misused his free will. And such things do happen. And Prabhupada said, you know, don't be surprised by the people who leave. You know, he said, be surprised by the people who stay. Yeah, actually, it took him a long time to become, you know. So at least he came and revealed his mind. Imagine if this person doesn't reveal the mind, he keeps it with himself. He'll keep blaspheming everywhere, wherever he goes. Actually, people who are devoid of quality generally go to inferiority complex zone. You will see that. And the intelligent people will understand that this person is not humble. He is feeling inferior because the one who has inferiority complex, they will always compare themselves with others. They will feel always insecure. They will consider other success to be their failure. If you say that so and so is successful, that person successful means I am failed. They will compare like that. Yeah. Actually, inferiority complex is very easy to understand. Yeah, humility is not true. No, that is not called humility. We don't call it humility. Yeah. Humility. Now, some people who, sometimes people pretend to be like, you know, humble. They look like humble. Oh, Prabhu, I am very, very fallen. Most often they don't agree that they are actually fallen. They say they are fallen. See, why a person says, Prabhu, I am very, very, Mataji, I am fallen. I am very fallen. I am very low devotee. So are you enough satisfied with my humility that you consider me advanced devotee? That is the attitude. Yeah, but others may think it's yeah. Such a wrong perception is very much possible. Well, yeah. When they grow, everyone will come to know sooner or later. But one thing, Mataji, often people who are endowed with many qualities, will be seen as people who are very proud. Because when they exhibit, and for example, somebody is playing Mridangam nice, somebody is singing very nice, somebody is speaking nice, somebody is doing dressing up very nice, somebody is cooking very nice. Even if that person doesn't say, people will say, see, he has done this work so well, that means he or she must be proud. So people will come to the country. So, somebody has many qualities, they have to painstakingly remain humble. It's a big challenge to see humility. You have to also feel humble and express humility. Both are important. It's not enough to only feel humble in the heart. Externally also it's important that we exhibit humility when we deal with others. And at the least expected moment we can become proud in this world. Especially when we have some qualities. So we have to be very careful. When I come to the world next week, we'll devote one full class for that. Because I also have to learn that quality. Very important. Wonderful question. Now, this is a show off. Both they have it. Like, you know, if we say, okay, the holy name will take its effect. Over a bit of time, it may take a very long period. So, we have to also work on, like, you know, first we have to know what are my weaknesses. Some good source will tell you. I just telling you. I have 2-3 friends, I won't tell you the names. They are really very good friends. Only I know them and they know me. And they tell my, time to time they keep telling me, you have to improve in this, you have to improve in that. So, it really helps. And they tell you, do you have any friends like that? Yeah. Yeah. If somebody can tell us like that, then we can actually note down in our diary. We can see, we have something called the emotional diary, we call it. No? So we write down, okay, I behaved like this, I did like this, this quality actually that, so I have to change in this manner. So we can work on that. And we also have to work on that. For example, you know, if I have a habit of always pinpointing faults, then how can I change that habit? By glorifying. Actually, glorification never comes in the mouth. It's very difficult. Sometimes you see, this devotee is so wonderful, but you feel in the heart, but mouth doesn't speak it. Yeah. But if you find some fall, that comes in the mouth immediately. See that, huh? Isn't it? Yeah. Naturally it comes. So we have to change that second nature, no? And change that nature. So when you find fault, you close them off. And then you feel some glory. Then even if the person is far away, you painstakingly go there and tell, I felt that glory in you, please kindly accept it. But I want to say. So that is what is actually changing our nature. We have to painstakingly do that. Not needed. Actually, for example, if you glorify someone and they feel that you are flattering and all, even if they tell you it's a flattery, heart-to-heart they will be happy. Externally they will say, no, you are just flattering me. What Prabhu, what Mataji, you know, I know that I don't have any qualities, you simply glorify everyone, they will say. But they will like you heart-to-heart. This person. Good person. Yeah, really. It's a nature, yeah. On the contrary, often we go to people and say, Mataji or Prabhuji, I am your real friend. You know, Bhakti Bhagavan Saraswati has said, anyone who flatters you is your enemy. So I am not going to flatter you. For the sake of your advancement in Krishna consciousness, I am telling you, see, these are the paths, number one, number two, number three. What do you think they will feel? Now they will say, thank you Mataji, you helped me. You know, you are my good friend. I will remember this as right in Prunda, they will say. And when they go to the other friends, they will say, oh, this person, I just don't want to go near that person. They will, when they see you, they will be scared. From a distance only, they will be scared. Yeah. And that's what many of us do, you know. Yeah, many of us do. If it is a little over glorification, you know, nobody is going to hang you for that. But you glorified me a little more than what I deserve. People don't mind little extra. But at least you want, although we say that some people have that nature also, you will find that they glorify everyone and everything always. But they don't become anybody's enemy, you will see that. But we become enemies by pinpointing faults. Yeah. Actually, it makes you humble. See, amongst Vaishnavas, when glorification is done, it actually makes you humble. When somebody glorifies your real quality and they identified it specifically in the glorify. Actually, on birthdays and all, we have glorification sometimes of devotees. So, when you exactly find out the good quality in a devotee and you pinpoint it, you know, immediately the devotee feels humble. He feels that, no, this is not my quality. It's all other Vaishnavas are blessing me or Vaishnavas. So, the idea of one Vaishnava glorifying one another is actually for helping us develop humility, actually. It's not just flattering.